This is Mark Strassman, reporter with California Politics Today. We're about to speak to Jesse Reynolds at the Center for Genetics and Society, where he's Director for Biotechnology Accountability. Welcome back to California Politics Today.
Thanks.
What's the view of your group on the recent brilliant political move by Republican Arnold Schwarzenegger to distance himself from President Bush on stem cells by ordering the Department of Finance to loan $150 million to the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine?
Right. Well, you know, our opinions are centered around the activities of the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine, the CIRM itself, and its leadership in fundraising, Robert Klein. What he's been doing over the past 9 months, or almost a year now, in fact, is something of a fundraising drive. Proposition 71 has some constitutional challenges. The CIRM was unable to issue its own normal bonds up to $300 million per year as authorized by Prop 71. While those challenges, constitutional challenges, were in place, Klein was seeking a type of bridge financing in which private individuals or organizations that he approached would loan the CIRM money until those normal bonds become available. If those bonds don't become available, if the plaintiffs and the constitutional challenges happen to be successful, then those loans become gifts to the state. So there's not any risk to the state financially in that regard.
Right.
$200 million of these of this bridge financing was technically authored by the approved by the state, authorized by the state to be issued quite some time ago.
Authorized by the CIRM.
By the CIRM, by a committee of the CIRM that's actually chaired by State Treasurer Angelides. Mr. Klein has successfully raised $14.5 million, I believe it was, in such financing that was approved several months ago. This was with five different foundations centered throughout California. He said in recent days that he has another $30 million lined up that he'll be approving shortly. That would make for a total of pushing $45 million.
Right. Did the money that was granted, the $14 million, is that going to stem cell research as such, or is it going to training grants?
Well, yeah. The bonds must primarily go to the grants.
Right.
However, the first and only round of grants issued so far are training grants to train the next generation of researchers.
Right.
This would be fellowships and lab costs and so forth, and
right,
for grad students and postdocs, as well as the development of curricula and so forth at, I forgot how many universities and research centers, about 16 I think it was.
Right. Most every UC campus, Stanford, and
right,
so on.
Right. Typically most of what you'd expect.
Right.
Throughout California. So what Governor Schwarzenegger did is, conveniently on the day after Bush vetoed a bill to expand the range of research available for federal funding, Governor Schwarzenegger, in response to a request by Mr. Klein, as well as the Vice Chair of the ICOC, Ed Pinhote, he authorized the state's general fund to purchase $150 million of that bridge financing. So in a way, it's a loan from one pot of money in the state government to another pot.
But a pot under the control of Mr. Klein.
Right. The CIRM is sort of a semi, quasi-public, quasi-private agency. It has a separate pot of money. It has separate bonds. It has a fairly independent governance structure. So this isn't just, you know, transferring digits in a ledger, so
right,
to speak.
And in fact, if the money, the case-in-chief brought against Prop 71 by its opponents argued that the CIRM and the ICOC that oversees it were not under the exclusive management control of the state of California. They lost that argument in Alameda County Superior Court, and they're appealing it. But that is, in some sense, on point about what you've just said as to who controls the money. If the money is transferred into the CIRM account, it's presumably not it either is or isn't any longer under the control of the state of California, and that was one of the questions that was at issue in the lawsuit.
Right. There's a lot of legal fine lines here. I know that when Mr. Klein wrote the law, he certainly looked into this and, for example, hired some of the lawyers that had defended Prop 10 and so forth. So that's something for the courts to sort out. However, that excessive independence of the CIRM has been reinforced by the behavior of the CIRM leadership, particularly by Mr. Klein, not only through his hostile relationship with the state legislature, but the fact that when the CIRM needed support, it did not turn to Sacramento. It turned to private organizations.
And how do you account for that? Why do you think he didn't approach the governor for this money a long time ago?
Well, I suspect that any support from Sacramento would have come with the strings of oversight attached.
What kind of, without getting into all the details, as a general classification, what kinds of oversight exercised by whom?
Well, when you think about a typical state agency, Department of Transportation,
right.
The legislature writes an appropriation to the department, Caltrans. They do their activities. They issue annually or twice a year a report to the legislature. The head of the department will appear before the legislature and say, look, I did my job. I did my job well. Here's how I spent the money well. Give me more money to do more good work. And our elected officials then judge that. If they're judging poorly, they can pay the price of the polls. And this is the steps of how representative democracy is supposed to work.
Right.
And the CIRM is something of an exception to that.
As was specified by Mr. Klein and the other authors of the bill when they wrote it.
Yeah, it's what's built in.
Right.
And it was their intention to create a politically insulated, if not isolated, institution.
They call it the Independent Citizens Oversight Committee, and
yeah,
independent
kind
of something.
Yeah. You can think of a double meaning to that.
Right.
So when I heard this, in a way, I was a little, what I was disappointed by is that Governor Schwarzenegger missed an opportunity to bring the CIRM a little more fully under state control.
What substantively and what procedurally would you have had him done? If you had been Governor Schwarzenegger and you'd been approached, what terms and conditions would you have set on the funding?
It's a little tricky, of course, because a technical accountability would have legally would have involved modification of Prop 71.
Prohibited by Prop 71.
Which is prohibited by Prop 71 for 3 more years.
Well, actually only 2 by now. Actually closer to a little more than 1 by now.
Right. 1.5 years from now,
right.
It might be a different situation, but 1.5 years we might have a different governor. So
right.
We'll just have to see. I think it could have occurred in a more informal way. A negotiation, some pledges to of how Mr. Klein and other leadership of the CIRM will interact with the legislature. And
we're talking also about conflict of interest regulations?
For example, things like that. I mean, I think there's some of the content of the compromise that the Senate leadership negotiated between the CIRM and Senator Ortiz in terms of the regulations around conflict of interest and open meetings and so forth. Some of that's been met, and I think some of it hasn't successfully been met. And I think that those are other areas where there could be some negotiation between Senate leadership, between Senator Ortiz, with Governor Schwarzenegger, and so forth.
There was another issue that was in contention between the CIRM and political leadership in the legislature, which had to do with a point made frequently and loudly by the proponents of Prop 71 during the campaign to pass it, namely that the taxpayers of California stood to receive about $1.1 billion in royalty revenues from the discoveries to be financed by their money in this regard. And while it seems to have that issue seems to have fallen by the public wayside recently, the last gasps of that particular issue seem to say taxpayers would be getting no money, and the corporations that would be commercializing the discovery said, if we have to give them money, we're not going to bother to do it.
Right, right, right. Well, there's a couple of different lines of discussion going on, and in that regard, actually, I think as best as can be done at the moment, the news is fairly positive. The intellectual property policy is a set of regulations that will govern this, and the CIRM is in the final stages of implementing its IP policy for grants to nonprofit research institutions and universities. And this does include a revenue sharing for the state. Any profits that go to the grantee institution above the first $500,000, the state will get a quarter of that. Now, how much that...
That's for the Stanford or UC makes a discovery, licenses it to Genentech or Geron,
right?
Or Pfizer,
right, right, right. It could be a number of things, or this could be with, let's say, the Burnham Institute. It's not a university;
right.
It's a nonprofit research institute.
But I would imagine that the big money will be made by the companies that commercialize these discoveries and charge people. I don't know if it's a pun on how the genetics work, an arm and a leg to get those treatments. Obligations that they're going to have to put money back in, put some of that money back into the state, and or provide low-cost treatments to the people of California who can't spend $100,000 for a new set of islets of Langerhans?
Well, you should be careful not to underestimate that if a grant goes to a public university and there's a profitable discovery and it's licensed out to a corporation, in the normal run-of-the-mill things, if this is NIH funding or whatnot,
right.
The university can make out quite well in this process. And in that way...
Even if there are no direct payments from the commercializer...
Well, there are, right? I mean, those are the licensing fees.
Right, no, but I meant directly to the state of California under
right.
these terms.
Under the normal funding regime of, let's say, the federal government and NIH, and there's not returns to the state,
right.
The universities can do quite well in that regard.
And the state, as you say, in the latest iteration here, are likely to give a quarter of the royalties that they get above $500,000
back
to California.
And the idea of $500,000 is that you need a threshold so that you don't have to deal with the paperwork
right.
of minor discovery. The original threshold was $100,000. I think that's a little more appropriate.
Right.
But what the situation is that they're trying to avoid is the blockbuster.
Right, exactly.
Right? Something is runaway successful, the 1 in 100 or 1 in 1,000 grants that just produces the gold mine.
Right.
That the state can recapture some money.
Okay.
Now, I have a hunch that this is not going to turn out to be $1.1 billion. I think that number was inflated all along, no matter how you structure the IP policy.
Right.
I think it was inflated all along. But in terms of what the policy is right now for nonprofits, I'm pleasantly surprised, in fact. And there's also provisions for affordable access to these therapies by...
uninsured and underinsured?
The uninsured and underinsured within California. And there's two different mechanisms within that policy to do that. So I think it's we'll have to see how it plays out. There's questions, gee, is that $500,000 too high of a threshold? If the companies aren't implementing their affordable access programs appropriately, does the Attorney General have the authority to come in and throw his or her weight around in a way to make sure that that's enforced? We'll see about that.
But as you were saying, though, you would have liked Governor Schwarzenegger to have taken a more proactive position in terms of even the informal discussions that he might have had with Mr. Klein to nudge things in the direction that you would like to see.
Yeah, I think it was a golden opportunity to implement some much-needed accountability at the CIRM, accountability that ideally goes to elected elected officials, which in turn are accountable every few years, supposedly, to the voters of California.
Does the discussion we've just been having prove the case of the people who lost the case in Alameda Superior Court that the CIRM is not under the exclusive management and control of the state of California?
Well, that in the end will be decided on the technicalities of constitutional law.
Well, apart from the technicalities of constitutional law, on the plain meaning of the term, management and control, and the fact we've had a 10-12 minute discussion about how the CIRM goes its own way without regard to the governor who just gave it $50 million.
I mean, I think the intention of Robert Klein, who happens to be both the author of Proposition 71, its leading proponent, and also, now at this point in time, its chief implementer, the fact that he went to the private sector.
Chairman of the ICOC.
As chairman of the ICOC, in many ways he is its primary implementer of this law. The fact that he turned to the private sector instead of engaging with the state, I think reinforces his ideas that this is to be an autonomous, independent, perhaps excessively independent institution.
Okay, two last questions.
Yeah.
What do you think the chances are that the state of California will get the money back from something under its may or may not be under its exclusive control? What are the chances that this money is going to come back into the general fund at some point, do you think?
Well, I think the money coming back to the general fund hedges upon the ultimate decisions of the court. And I haven't looked at the cases that closely, and I'm certainly not a constitutional scholar, but the fact that the first level of the court, the first out of three, has ruled on the side of the CIRM would shift any prediction that I would give over to their favor. But on the other hand, although the plaintiffs are opponents of Proposition 71, rooted in a couple of different ideologies of the moral status of the embryo, as well as small government and so forth.
Right.
The points they bring up, I think, their arguments that they've chosen to follow, I think are significant. Just here, you and I are chatting about them in sort of a layman's way, although we're informed members of the public. I think it shows that they raise some serious points that need to be taken not with a grain of salt.
Okay, and the last point has to do with the creeping assumption that embryonic stem cell research is equivalent to something that will doubtlessly lead to a reduction in human suffering. I wanted to quote the last statement of the governor's letter that he sent to the finance director. California is poised to lead not only this country but all countries on stem cell research. We cannot fall behind the nations who are making this life-saving science a priority.
Mm-hmm.
Has embryonic stem cell science saved any lives yet?
Well, there are currently no therapies from embryonic stem cell research.
Right, and I've noticed, and I'm wondering whether you've noticed, in the debate in Washington that was just held in great depth, there seems to be, the opponents either have, as you said, qualms about the objections based on their beliefs in the moral status of embryos, and the people on the other side, who may have varying degrees from just as much to no qualms about the moral status of the embryo, routinely, uniformly, and consistently talk about the potential of stem cell research as though it were an actuality. And I'm wondering, from your perspective there, since you're the director of biotechnology accountability, whether you think this is a political, a form of political rhetoric, but I'm wondering, in terms of the substance of it, whether in fact it's as justified as the proponents of federal funding, state loans, or any other more private funding for embryonic stem cell research seem to be.
Well, I think this is the real tragedy, I think, around the debate of this research, is that in a polarized political climate like this, while there are certainly a lot of sincere motivations on both sides of the debate, I think that what's the saying? Truth is the first casualty of war.
That's what they say.
I think that truth and objective analysis has been a real casualty in this debate. And those sins are on the hands of both sides. And I think that the people who lose out on this are all the people of America, whether they're interested as taxpayers, as potential recipients of therapies, as people who suffer from diseases and are that might be treated by stem cell research, and they're holding out hope. There's a number of ways to look at it, and there's hype on one side, and there's inflated rhetoric of murder on the other side, as well as hyping of adult stem cells as an alternative, and that's the real tragedy. And what gets overlooked are a number of other concerns, for example, about, we were just talking about, the excessive commercialization of the public university as a concern, and we've brought up the potential for exploitation of women who will be asked to provide eggs for some of the stem cell research, and that just gets lost in the shouting, and that, I think, is really what we're missing out here.
Okay, well, fortunately, there are some groups that want to reduce the hype and increase the information content, and you're one of them, and I want to thank you for participating in our discussion this afternoon.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you. Bye.